Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Shamita Basu. Welcome back to The Takeaway. Most countries around the world have decided to close schools and businesses, placing strict restrictions to stop the spread of the coronavirus. But Sweden has taken a different approach. Gatherings of 50 or more people have been banned, but schools for children under 16 years old remain open, and restaurants and bars have continued serving customers. Some in the U.S. are looking to Sweden as a possible model for how to go through this pandemic while avoiding the painful consequences of the shutdown. Joining us today is Ishan Tharoor, foreign affairs columnist at The Washington Post. Hi, Ishan.
Hi there.
So can you start by explaining to us what is the so-called Swedish model for managing the outbreak?
It's tricky to brand it as a coherent, clear, and different model. What is striking, as you just pointed out, is that they did not close down schools for students under the age of 16, which is a marked difference than most other Western democracies. Certainly for us in the United States, that's been a huge part of how people have experienced the lockdowns here. And rather than vigilantly enforcing lockdowns and quarantines, it's just issued certain social distancing recommendations that it trusts the Swedish public will take. What that's led to is a far more relaxed environment, or at least from the outside, it's been perceived as a far more relaxed environment in Sweden, where you see restaurants open, people congregating in groups smaller than 50. And that, for many in the U.S., especially American conservatives who are critical or skeptical of the degree of the lockdowns being imposed, see it as a kind of alternative.
And how does Sweden compare to other European countries, both in their approach and what we're seeing now in their outcomes?
Well, I think, you know, their approach is certainly much more relaxed. At the same time, people are social distancing on their own in many ways. Businesses have not prospered in the ways that people in the U.S. think they should without lockdowns. And of course, it's seen a very significant number of deaths, especially when compared to its Nordic neighbors. At the same time, it's lagging in testing. And Swedish officials you talk to claim that as a result of their relaxed approach, critics would say essentially a passive approach, you're seeing a situation where places like Stockholm, the capital, are approaching a level of herd immunity. Now, I'm no public health expert, and Swedish officials suggest that that's not the actual goal of the strategy. The goal of the strategy was not herd immunity, but it could be a byproduct of it. Critics of this would come back and say that essentially it's just been a very relaxed and somewhat lazy response, and Sweden, as a result, is suffering more than it needs to at this time of crisis.
Obviously, there are fundamental structural differences between Sweden and the United States. It becomes hard to compare these numbers and these outcomes when there are so many differences. But maybe can you walk us through some of these structural differences, particularly when it comes to healthcare and social service systems?
Right. This is what I find so fascinating about American conservatives taking up the banner of Sweden. Sweden and its neighbors have pretty robust, sophisticated welfare states. So on a health level, there is just the fundamental difference of a society that has functional universal healthcare and a society that does not. And then, of course, Sweden also has a pretty robust safety net beyond health spending, where there is effective unemployment insurance, where when this pandemic struck, the government moved to fast-track sick pay. So if you don't go to work, if you'd feel like you're sick and you don't want to put your colleagues at risk, you're not jeopardizing your own capacity to take care of your family. So there's just this fundamental, I would say almost cultural divide in the ways in which these societies experience these crises. And so it makes the idea that a Swedish model can be transplanted to the U.S., which is something no one in Sweden is saying, rather laughable.
Now, I also want to bring into the conversation Sweden virologist and author Lena Einhorn. Hi, Lena.
Hi.
Now, you're actually living in Stockholm right now. Tell us what life has been like in Sweden for the past few months.
Well, people my age, I'm over 60, we tend to be cautious and self-isolate to varying degrees. But the cafes are open and it's pretty dense on a sunny day in Stockholm. People are walking around and sitting in the parks and sitting in cafes and restaurants.
So does it feel like Sweden's approach is working? What does the data tell us?
The data tells us it's not working. Actually, yesterday, pulled out from our world in data are the different curves for the 9 countries in the world with the highest reported death rates. Mm-hmm. And Sweden is one of them. It's, if you exclude those microstates, Sweden is in 5th place. And what you see is that all the other countries, except for Sweden and to some extent the United States, have a bell-shaped curve. So they have very high death rates, but they have come down so that they are at very low daily death rates today, whereas Sweden is on a high plateau. And the United States is the only country which is almost as high as Sweden, but not as bad.
Lena, can you explain what herd immunity is and how it works and what's happening in Sweden?
Well, herd immunity is the concept which is usually, as it sounds, applied in veterinary contexts, uh-huh. or as a result of vaccination. It basically means that when enough people are immune against a pathogen, then the pathogen cannot really find a new host so easily. And then sort of the level of infection in society goes down. Usually this is achieved through vaccination. And the idea has been here that since we don't have a vaccine, the speculation is that the disease is often, very often, silent, so that we may actually approach herd immunity, which is requires somewhere between, depending on how contagious it is, maybe at least above 50% of society has to be immune in order to achieve this herd immunity. And so the speculation has been that because Sweden has this system whereby we have a lot of deaths and people interact more, that we would achieve this silently, this herd immunity. Mm-hmm. But in fact, when you now start getting antibody testing in various societies and also in Sweden, that's not the way it looks at all.
It seems like a very big factor in the Swedish approach to containing the outbreak has been trust in its citizens to follow guidelines. But Lena, you're saying that, you know, people are out and it's pretty dense and folks are sitting at cafes. Does it feel like this was an effective approach? And culturally, how did Swedish people respond to this?
Well, the Finnish president said, because they started out having open cafes and restaurants too, and he said right. very wisely, if you have a restaurant and a cafe open, people are going to go there. So mm. you cannot keep them open and then tell people not to go there. That doesn't work. So people are following the rules. The tables are supposed to be more separated. But, you know, obviously, if you look at the numbers, the Swedish strategy has not worked. And with regard to herd immunity, it's never been Sweden's stated strategy, but it has always been under the breath, so to speak. Mm-hmm. The bonus of Sweden's strategy. But the numbers that are coming now are not supporting that at all.
Ishan Tharoor from the Washington Post, I want to bring you back into the conversation for a moment, because I think a lot of the argument for keeping things open or reopening things quickly in the United States has been an economic advantage. What do we know about how Sweden's economy has been doing?
It's suffering like everyone else. The Swedish economy is heavily dependent on global value chains. So the fact that the virus has essentially paralyzed global trade in many ways, and Sweden is going to see a hit to its GDP that's roughly, you know, around 6-7%. That's what the recent forecasts suggest. And that's on the same level as Germany and the United States. Mm-hmm. And again, Swedish officials have not framed what they're doing in economic terms. In the way that the lockdowns in the U.S. have been framed in economic terms. Yes, some restaurants remain open, some businesses are functioning, but at the same time, it's taking a big economic hit. The government is trying to mitigate that through its safety nets. And it frames its strategy, which Lena pretty effectively points to as a not particularly successful one, as a kind of long-term plan until a vaccine is found. That this is something that this kind of relaxed structure is something they can live with, as opposed to a lockdown that gets enacted and then people assume that just after it's lifted, everything can go back to normal. In the way they frame it, the Swedish officials you can speak to, they frame it as a kind of new normal that people have to just adjust to.
We have about a minute left, but Lena, from your perspective as a virologist, which countries do you think should be a model for other parts of the world?
Well, I mean, the ones who really implemented harsh or severe restrictions early on, they fared very well, like Israel or Finland, you know, that really started early. Countries like United Kingdom, who did it like halfway through and in a catastrophic manner, for them it was harder, but they are still coming down much more than Sweden is. I would say the United States should not use Sweden as a model. It's not a good model. And the United States is really not faring much better than Sweden, and New York is definitely faring worse. Sweden doesn't have to implement a lockdown at this point, but there are certain things that should be changed. For instance, quarantine of a family where one member is sick, or always using face masks when you work with the elderly, because there's not even a recommendation of using face masks unless you're working with someone who's sick. So there are simple things that should be changed and so far haven't been changed.
Lena Einhorn is a Swedish virologist and author, and Ishan Tharoor is a foreign affairs columnist at The Washington Post. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.